insert theme music here.
Welcome to the Aphorists.
Welcome to the Aphorists. My name is Anthony.
I'm Jesse.
We're here at the lab in San Francisco, California. This is our inaugural episode that no one will probably ever hear. We're going to talk about arts,
culture,
digestion.
We're not going to talk about digestion.
Street feces.
Yeah, when you're at the lab, you really can only think about street feces. 16th and Cap is like it's the urinal of San Francisco, as far as I'm concerned. Is there a worse place than this? Maybe the Tenderloin.
I think just in terms of concentration, this is pretty. This is an intense urban experience, perhaps unrivaled in the state of California, I would say.
Yeah, I guess for me, I feel safer here than I do in the Tenderloin, but I feel like the mission is attempting to be something that the Tenderloin never is attempting to be, which is like a place of culture and a place of, you know, the labs here. There's lots of shopping on Valencia. There's, you know, Mission Street itself has a lot of activities.
This
street is like, it is, you can see all manner of crazy human excrement.
Yes.
Here.
Well, that's a little harsh. That's a little harsh. Human excrement?
Oh, no.
You mean
excrement of humans. I wasn't implying that the people here are like feces.
Okay. I'm glad that's clarified. So, yeah, I think it's kind of a holdout here against it's a bulwark against gentrification, this little spot here. There's a single occupancy hotel around the corner. I don't know the name of it.
Yeah.
But there's always tons of crazy activity out in front of that place. There's a car wash across the street from there. The Redstone Building itself, do you know much about the history of the Redstone Building?
Not too much. It used to be like an old labor hall.
It was a labor hall. I think like this area, Lower Valencia, Valencian Market, back in the day they used to actually call it the Hub. I know this because when I first moved to San Francisco 20 years ago, I would hang out with 70-year-olds. And
doing what?
Printmaking.
Oh, really? Here?
Yeah, yeah. And I know from them that all the hiring halls, there still are. I think there's the Stationary Engineers Union is over on Valencia, very close to here. I think that's the only hiring hall in this area now. They've sort of been dispersed out into the Bayview and so forth. But, so I think the Redstone Building initially was focused on labor. The lab itself is in what was probably initially a big meeting hall.
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe a hiring hall. It'd be interesting to know. I think there's like stickers for the Wobblies on the walls upstairs and stuff.
Right. Yeah, we've been in here for a while, but I don't really know too much. Probably somebody does, but
that might be that might be a good
thing to research.
Yeah, and maybe have somebody on who knows. There are people around who know about this stuff.
Right. So we have we're still working on our format here for the Aphorists, but we like to cover a couple sections. The first part we're going to call point counterpoint with Jesse and Anthony, where we do our typical thing where we disagree about something that is probably not something worth disagreeing over. One long-standing disagreement we have, or argument, or discussion, whatever you want to call it, is about the rights of cars versus the rights of bicyclists and pedestrians. I
think I'm worn out on this subject.
You are worn out on this subject?
Yeah.
You don't want to talk about it?
Yeah, can we go back to it?
Yeah, we can go back.
What's next?
Then the next one would be we want to talk about another point, counterpoint, is whether we love which podcasts we like and which podcast personalities we like. Yeah,
actually, that was one of the points of this podcast, that we want to not be a podcast review podcast, although that would be kind of funny.
Meta,
I'm sure,
right?
There are ones.
There must
there.
Be, yeah.
But we're both avid podcast listeners.
Yes.
And, that's why we want to start a podcast. But,
so the history of that is Anthony used to listen to Mark Maron WTF at full volume in our studio. And I would walk in during the intro. So at the beginning of WTF, Mark always has he says what's on his mind.
The rant.
Right. And I walked in one day and I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, turn this garbage off. Right? Oh, what the fuck? Yeah, I didn't even do that on purpose. And then, so it's just, it's hard to walk into that. But then, anyway, Anthony convinced me I should give it a try. So I listened to it and I really liked it and sort of like did a deep dive and listened to every, you know, bought the premium app on my iPhone.
Yeah, you're very comprehensive.
I am very comprehensive. And then listened to every single episode from beginning to end during a period of time when I was, you know, walking a lot and, that, and so it was Marc Maron kept me company during a dark time of my life. So I became then, you know, a huge, huge fan of WTF. And, I feel like he helped me through, this, you know, recovering from this injury. And, it was just really great. And since then I've listened to tons and tons of podcasts. The one that we can really agree on is Marc Maron. You've tried to get me into, Tom Sharpling, who I think is irritating.
Well, let's back up. Like, I think, so wait, had you listened to podcasts before? I think it's interesting to just talk about our relationship with podcasts.
Right. Yeah. I think I listened to, NPR Planet Money. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. It's funny. Like, it's been so many years now that I can't think of what my first podcasts were. Probably, Radiolab. Probably Radiolab was one of my first real go-to podcasts.
Yeah, I feel like podcasts sucked me into like a whole, like, you know, being like a Twitter user and like kind of just being more more engaged mm-hmm. with sort of new media.
Right.
My wife got me a refurbished iPod for my birthday in like 2007. Mm-hmm. I think it was a Nano, that first Nano. Mm-hmm. Which I still have.
Mm-hmm.
It actually functions more like a shuffle now.
Right.
The scroll wheel doesn't work.
Right, right.
And that's when I started listening to podcasts. And this is funny. It's like, you know, I just used I would use the iTunes store to find podcasts. And the first ones I listened to were always, I would listen to Vintage Radio.
Mm-hmm.
I think I started just with NPR because I've always been an avid NPR listener.
Right.
I kind of go through phases. But there was a period before listening to podcasts where I would just, like, literally my day would be, you know, if I was working in the studio or at home, you know, I would listen to the NPR. Like, oh, I would listen to Fresh Air. If I liked Fresh Air, I'd listen to it twice. I'd listen to it at 9 and at 1.
Right. The and same episode?
Yeah, and then when really? NewsHour came on at... I just like the jabbering away.
Right, right. Well, you know, it's funny. It's like you seem to like listen. I'll ask you, did you like X? And you'll say, oh, I kind of fell asleep listening to it, which I just don't understand. Like, it's not, I've never been able to have background radio on. If there's something on, it has my basically undivided attention, more or less. When I put a podcast in my headphones and then I'm working in the studio, which is what I typically do, or, you know, take a walk, like, I'm pretty engaged with it. You know, I'm doing manual, kind of not menial, but just not thoughtful tasks in the studio when I'm listening. So cutting paper or whatever, painting something, or I don't really have to think about what I'm doing. And then I really give the podcast my full attention. Whereas you seem to like.
Yeah, I have a problem, to be honest with you. Like, I listen to podcasts while I fall asleep.
Right.
And I listen to podcasts around my house with my headphones in because my wife does not like to listen to voices.
Yes.
She's maybe even more extreme than you in that, like, if there's voices happening. Yeah.
Right.
But I just think it's funny to recount, like, my first experience with podcasts, if you're interested.
Yeah.
I would listen to, like, vintage radio shows.
Right.
Those are the first podcasts I listened to.
Like,
it'd be like...
Casey Kasem?
Oh, no, like dramatic shows.
Oh, like...
There's one that I still love. It's called Vintage Horror Radio, and they have, like...
Really?
And they're always these, like, you know, be like, who's one of those guys who would write all those old horror stories, like mid-century horror story writers? I'm just totally...
Edgar Allan Poe?
Sure, but I mean, I think more like...
It's like a dramatic,
recent.
Right,
yeah.
Okay. But so a dramatic reading of, like, totally, whatever, yeah.
Yeah, that were actually broadcasts on radio. Mm.
Okay, and they had recordings of them, and someone converted them to a podcast.
Yeah,
right on.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So that's like 2007 and 2008, and then...
Right.
I remember So 2008, during the election, I think the first sort of all news one, I don't even remember how I discovered it. I think because I was reading Slate. That must be it. And I started listening to Slate political podcast.
Right.
In like mid-2008.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. That's over 4 years ago now.
God, yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's funny. I've been listening back to the back catalog of a lot of like the Slate, like the Culture Gab Fest and the Double X.
I started listening
especially.
To their daily podcast, actually.
Right.
And I would, and they used to have a thing where you get a text podcast that was an aggregate of all the headlines of that morning. They don't do that anymore.
Right.
But you could actually, like, I would actually read on my little nano screen.
Oh, all of the
yeah,
headlines?
Yeah, it was just, like, they would hire writers to just, like, go through, read the paper, and just, like, aggregate. Washington Post reports, blah, blah, blah.
Right. It's funny how the medium has just changed, and, like, I mean, their podcasts, the, you know, Double X, Culture, Political. I don't listen to Hang Up and Listen or Hang Up and Drive, whatever the
Hang Up and Listen, yeah.
And then June Thomas on Books.
Books.
Books. I love the way she says Books.
The Book Nuke.
She's awesome. And then you know, their podcast really sets the bar, I think, and Maron, I mean, and Mark Maron as well. They're sort of like the best. We could aspire to be as good as those guys.
Yeah, Mark Maron's great.
And you turned me on to the Field Negro's Guide. What is it? Field Negro's Guide to Culture with
Arts and Culture
with W. Kamau
Bell and Vernon Reed.
And I just find it so uneven.
Yeah,
you know, both the recording quality and just like you know, I think what they're saying is a lot of the times interesting, but
I often like talky ones.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like blogging heads.
Yeah,
the sound quality
on
the
I just can't handle that. Why? Yeah. It's not that hard. As we've just demonstrated.
Blogging Heads has its own problems.
Right.
Richard, what's his name?
I don't know.
Robert Wright?
Right.
Robert Wright.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah. I thought that the one that they talked to, they interviewed the guy who broke the Jonah Lehrer story. That was really good. Really good interview. Really, that guy was a pretty impressive fellow.
Yeah.
And the sound quality was
all these
yeah.
If
we ever get this up on this, we'll get it up on our site, yeah. theaphorists.com. We are not sponsored by Audible.com. You can enjoy audiobooks by going to www.audible.com and then signing up for the first time, and we get nothing for that.
Audible.com/aphorists.
The aphorists, I wish. They're never gonna sponsor us. But I feel like every podcast is sponsored by Audible.com.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that we're not, but that I am an avid audiobook listener. By all means, you should sign up.
You were an audiobook listener before you were a podcast.
So that's probably like why I'm kind of coming late to the game in the podcast, to listening to podcasts, because I just listen to books, you know, all the time. I have probably 200 titles in my audio library. My audiobook listening has diminished because I'm so into the various podcasts that I subscribe to. I just subscribed to a couple new ones, the long form one that was recommended in the Culture Gab Fest recently. It's a really good interviewing authors who write long form nonfiction for magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And then The History of English is a podcast that this sort of amateur historian put together. I think it's called The History of English. He's talking about the origins of the English language and traces it back from the beginning, and each podcast is a new section. So it's sort of like iTunes University type deal.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not an accredited teacher. He's just an amateur expert.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. So I'm only on episode 2 of that, but it sounds really great.
Speaking of bad audio quality, I, through Facebook, was tracked down by someone I went to kindergarten with who is a Bigfoot hunter.
Uh-huh.
And I listened to his podcast for a little while about hunting Bigfoot.
And it just sounds like crap.
It was terrible.
Huh.
It was in a tin can.
Right.
So, like, this is one of the things we'll probably have to learn about. But I don't know whether it's the recording equipment or the the ways in which people compress the files in order to be downloaded.
Yeah, no, that'll be something we'll have to figure out.
I'll figure all that out. But I was like, say this about podcasting, like a thing that, again, like I said, I've always been an avid radio listener, NPR, et cetera, and you know, and like over our, since Jess and I are both in our early 40s, you know, we've sort of like watched the diminution of, is that a word?
No.
Diminution?
I don't know. Keep saying your sentence and we'll pick the right word.
The diminution of like local or regional radio?
The diminishment?
The diminishment. Okay, sure. You know, like the deregulation of radio markets under Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
90s led to, you know, the sort of ubiquity of Clear Channel, and like I think in the mid 90s you started to see, like, I remember in the 90s I really enjoyed listening to like the geriatric music station. It was KABL, and they played like, you know, Andy Williams and mm-hmm. Frank Sinatra all day, and like I just enjoyed the sort of the local flavor of local commercial radio stations with local commercials,
right?
There was also another country music station, and what you saw happen in the 90s was these stations would convert to either just go away entirely, convert to like right wing talk radio. Those were both AM radio stations, mm-hmm. or they would just become vehicles for a centralized sort of digital feed,
right?
From, so basically just like the total destruction of local radio,
right?
And sort of radio with any regional, you know, sense to it.
Right.
And, like, I realize podcasting doesn't have that, but there's a sort of a, there's an intimacy to it that commercial radio in particular just,
right,
like,
doesn't
lacks.
Have. Yeah, totally. Well, because it can be so individual. You know, I just said, you mentioned AM radio. I'm curious. I can't listen to AM radio. Like, the sound quality. Of amplitude modulation.
Radio audiophile.
I guess. I just, yeah. Like, it makes me feel unnerved the entire time. I can't enjoy it. Like when someone's got a baseball game tuned on an AM radio, like I can't even be in the same room.
Oh, that's
with
pure
it.
Nostalgia for me.
Is that right?
I remember like driving with my dad in the car and like listening to, you know, who was the guy? Paul Harvey.
I'm Paul
Harvey. Like somehow on AM, like all the S's would turn into static.
Yeah,
that?
Like, I do. It's just another. It just sounds tinny and ugh. It
yeah.
just drives me bonkers. Anyway.
But, yeah, and I remember, like, we'd go car camping with my dad when I was a kid, and, like, we'd be up in Vermont, and he'd be able to get the Boston station, so he'd be like,
right.
listening to the Red Sox.
Right.
You know, we'd be, like, in the pop-up camper. My dad would be out in the station wagon, like,
adjusting the knob.
Yeah, and
trying
hear
to get,
the,
right.
you'd be out in the woods, and you'd hear, like, the Red Sox game on the radio.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I do have that connection.
Right.
And another podcast I'll mention that I really liked for a while was the Gene Shepherd's radio show, The Brass Filigree, which was a radio show on WOR in New York
mm-hmm.
for years. I think like early 60s to maybe mid 70s. And Gene Shepherd is probably most famous as the writer of A Christmas Story.
Oh, really?
But he's... basically, like, the word raconteur was basically invented to describe this guy. And it's very hokey, but, like, it's a half-hour show. It was on 5 nights a week. And, you know, he's kind of a jerk. And, like, it turns out, if you listen to late interviews with him, he's definitely, like, of his time. And that he was kind of, like, mildly racist and
right.
all that stuff. But he had a good sort of absurdist sense of humor and,
mm-hmm.
and a good presence. And
so that's a podcast
stories.
You've listened to?
Yeah, yeah.
Right
the Brass Filigree. And somebody, huh. like, it's not an official taping.
Right.
Talk about poor sound quality. You
right.
would not be able to listen to that. Because somebody in their bedroom, like,
just converted
it on reel-to-reel.
Oh, wow. And then converted it into MP3.
You know, contemporary to it. So, because
right.
the radio station didn't record
right.
it. So that's the only, like, record of that,
right.
that show. But
you know, speaking of which, I was talking to somebody recently about... like how you used to hold up, you know, your little what is it called? Tape deck to
yeah.
the radio to get
oh,
a song,
yeah.
you know, and that
yeah.
was like the only way to get a song. And just now you can, you know, just get it on. I don't know. I'm sounding like a curmudgeon or something like that, but it's just incredible how far the technology has come, that you can on demand get whatever song in decent MP3 quality anytime you want. And like, so the mixtape's gone away, but the sort of choices that you have, you don't have to hold the tape recorder up to the radio and then get that like when you press record, you know, that initial thing. I don't know. It's just funny.
It's a little limiting.
Very limiting. Kids these days don't appreciate what they have.
No. Well, I can I continue with the Gene Shepherd thing? Because it kind of, so I think of Tom Sharpling as sort of a modern day Gene Shepherd. And it's funny because I've actually had Twitter interactions with Tom Sharpling on this.
Blocked.
I've since been blocked by Tom Sharpling on Twitter. But I met, he was telling one story about one night where he was, or this is Tom Sharpling now on The Best Show, which is a WFMU.
And we'll put a link up on our page.
Yeah, yeah. And he was talking about a trip down south where he stopped at South of the Border.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what South of the Border is?
It's like a fireworks place or something?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And you, like, they'd be, like, if I grew up in New York State and Jesse grew up in Connecticut, New England, basically.
Yeah.
We're both from New England, essentially. And you go south to get your fireworks.
Right.
You go to South of the Border. But every, so he's telling that story, and after the show, I tweeted him, and I said, oh, you know, Gene Shepherd did a thing on South of the Border. It was actually a PBS special called 4th of July and Other Disasters with starring Matt Dillon. Matt Dillon, this is probably from the early 80s.
Right.
That my brothers and I loved when we were kids. It was on PBS. And at the beginning, he goes to South of the Border. It's Gene Shepherd out of South of the Border in his like crazy 70s clothes and everything. Old fat guy. And so he tells Tom Sharpling that, yeah, Gene Shepherd did a bit on South of the Border. So he fires back, are you saying I ripped him off? I've never listened to 2 minutes of that guy. I know, we had a short exchange. And
did you say, no, that's not what you were accusing?
No, I wasn't saying that at all. And he's like, what? Why are you being so, I said, why are you being so defensive? And he shot back, why are you being so vague? But, and he's since,
you
like,
and Tom Sharpling are made for each other.
It's really funny because recently he went on a rant where he was saying, hey, I got this guy on Twitter, and I don't know if he was talking about me. There might be some other guy on Twitter he's talking about. This guy on Twitter is trying to tell me I sound like Gene Shepherd. He's like, I can't stand that crap. He's like, I bought the CDs, collected CDs of that thing. I threw it out the window. It's on,
you're it's an original, out, Tom. Don't worry.
Crushed out there on Route 1.
That's hilarious.
But, yeah, he'd since blocked, because we got into a little thing about the band.
Right. What would remind me again what that was?
My tweet that got him to block me was about him.
He was
ridiculing
shitting
the band. Like, I made mention of the fact that he was doing so in the very recent wake of the death of Levon Helm.
Right.
Implying that it was in bad taste.
Right.
I think that's what got me.
Makes sense. Blocked. You can be a little sanctimonious sometimes.
Oh, not you, though.
I'm never. Is that reverse sanctimony?
Sanctimonium.
Sanctimonium?
I don't know.
That's hilarious. Well, I'm sure.
Yeah, so podcasts. I think I regard podcasting as just sort of the renaissance of radio.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, that's how I think of it. It through decentralization.
Yeah.
Since it underwent this massive centralization.
Right.
And, man, I wish it would push, like, I think it's just starting to push NPR in a good direction. But NPR is so stodgy.
It's interesting. I mean, like, NPR is starting to pull so both Marc Maron and Slate are doing NPR. Like,
they're local, though.
Is it local-based only?
Well, I think...
I wasn't sure what the distribution was. But at any rate, I mean, well, obviously...
WNYC, it may be... They may be available nationally, I'm not sure. But WNYC in New York is doing their Slate podcast hour, Gabfest hour, where they do both culture and political Gabfest.
Right, and they're just merging those two together.
I imagine they're edited more heavily.
Yeah, I think they are, too. You know, it's funny, I never listen to the radio anymore. Like, I almost never turn it on. If I want to listen to Fresh Air, I have the podcast of Fresh Air. I think there's a freedom that you get with the podcast. And it's also curious, like, This American Life is, you know, was started off as a radio show and then became a podcast, and I wonder what their distribution is now. Like, if it's, if they're much more popular now because you can get the consume it in this other way. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you can, like, it's like the what the DVD did for TV shows, or
right,
like streaming, that's for TV shows. Now you can, like, gorge on a podcast.
Right.
Which you couldn't really do with a radio show.
Right. Do you, so now a podcast that we, so you like the Field Negro's Guide to Arts and Culture.
I think the problem with that one is that it's so irregular.
Right.
Like, it's so, like, they put one, like, what are we, September 26th. They haven't had one since August 20th.
Right.
So, like, unless you want to go back and re-listen to their old ones.
Like, right, which are good. I mean, that's what I did.
Yeah, they're not keeping it topical.
Yeah.
I do like some of the topical podcasts. Like,
right.
When something happens, I'll be anxious to listen to my, in the political sphere, I'll be anxious
right.
to listen to
Political Gab.
Slate,
right.
Gabfest,
yeah, and, for sure.
It's All Politics, which is Ron Elving and,
I don't know that one.
It's NPR.
Oh, okay.
But that's like a 20-minute one, but it's Ron Elving and, I'm blanking on the guys. It's the political junkie from.
Right.
NPR.
Do you listen to The Economist daily podcasts?
Nope.
That's really good. I like it. Yeah. They're short. Lots of different authors, you know, lots of different topics.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. I mean, there's a couple recurring things, but they basically just do like a week in ahead or, and, you know, they have one about technology and one, of, you know, authors and all the sort of normal topics. But good production values and interesting speakers, more or less.
Yeah.
So,
I like long form podcasts in general.
I
like them to be like an hour long.
Right.
Just turn it on and not think about it.
Yeah. I mean, you can, the thing that I like about The Economist is like they're perfect. You know, for me to like to drive from home to work or something like that. It's like a 15-minute drive and you can get two or three episodes in between.
Yeah,
so really short. Sort of like NPR's Planet
you're
Money.
Fiddling with your,
yeah, I mean, but, you know, I'm texting, I'm tweeting whether I've listened to it, what I like. No, I just put it on play. I mean, that's the other nice thing is you can just put it on play and it'll just go through.
Oh, right,
it'll just
play,
cycle through them until you're done. So,
ooh, we should maybe wrap this up.
Yeah. All right.